What's up, everybody? Welcome once again to Rock in a Hard...
Once upon a time to Rock in a Hard Place.
I am struggling.
We're nailing right these intros. Let's just keep this one because we've already botched three in a row.
It's already great.
This is
Hello,
perfect.
Everyone. Welcome to Rock in a Hard Place. We are back with another episode. I'm John Micah.
We are. Hello, this is James Mead. I'm sorry that I'm late. I was at the mall, as one does in 2023.
What were you doing at the mall?
I was looking for a present for Jacob because his 17th birthday is next week. So I was looking for like some fun little knickknack or collectible thing that he would like.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a productive visit. I found something he wanted, decided it was too expensive, looked it up on Amazon and ordered it on Amazon.
Amazon killing retailers worldwide. Is it coming from China?
I don't know. I didn't look into it that much.
Okay. So I'm gonna just put a little pet peeve out here since we're
okay,
on topic.
What's your pet
here.
Peeve? It's a book, by the way.
What book is it?
It's a book about Doctor Who from like the 60s, because Jacob was really into that, and it's about the Daleks episode where it's like the end of the world thing.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah, like about how they made that episode and all the props and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I'm back to my pet peeve. When companies put the American flag on it and say designed in the USA, but then on the bottom it says made in China. So it's got like, it's got the American flag. It's all like, yeah, America. And then it says made in China.
Totally. Dude, I don't know if you remember this show, but we played a 4th of July concert down in Cerritos, California. This was years and years ago. And incidentally, this was one show where a random security guard came up to me while we were all eating dinner in the catering area backstage. And he was like, hey, which one of you is James? And I was like, that's me. And he goes, oh, your mom's here. And I was like, no. And he was like, no, your mom's here. She's at the gate. She wants to get in. Can we let her in? I was like, no, that's not true. There's no. So this lady was trying to claim that she was my mom to come backstage.
Crazy.
But yeah, so sometimes fans get a little crazy. But we have more stories about that on future episodes of Rock in a Hard Place, don't we?
Yeah, we got lots to come still.
So about this whole made in China / designed in USA thing. The flags on the table, there was like a bunch of decorations everywhere.
Yes,
and there were these,
I remember
you know,
this.
Like the little flags that you wave. It's like a little like 10-inch stick with a tiny little American flag on it. The flags had stickers on them that said made in China. And I was like, that is so ironic that these American flags for the 4th of July celebration today have stickers that say made in China on them.
Made in China.
So
yeah.
I agree
certain
with
things,
pet peeve.
Yeah, certain things should probably just be made in America if it's, you know, like bald eagles.
Yeah, we make them the best here.
Oh,
birds aren't real,
that's
so
great.
They're made in Taiwan or Singapore or something like that.
Well, it's been a busy few weeks. It's wintertime, snowy. I've actually been up on the mountain a whole bunch. I'm doing ski patrol this year. So
Snow
we
patrol.
Talked about that. Good band.
You're doing snow patrol in the band. You're in a different band.
Another band. No. So, I joined ski patrol.
No, you're like
this year,
the red jacket ski patrol superhero guy now, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. If you break yourself, I come and help get you off the mountain. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been fun, and I've been skiing, you know, my whole life, so I love skiing, being up there, and it's been something I've thought about doing for a long time, and finally decided to do it this year, and boy, it's a ton of training, ton to remember, like, you just have to be ready for anything, kind of.
Yeah, what was the training like to get certified for it?
It's called OEC, Outdoor Emergency Care, and it's a ski patrol specific. It's like... I don't know, 80 to 90% of what you would do to get EMT certified. So it's not quite full EMT certification, but it's got a lot of that stuff. And then it's got kind of a bent towards being in the snow and in the mountains, because obviously you don't have all of the same resources available to you if you're up on a mountain.
So you're saying ski patrol takes place in the snow?
Yes, it does.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you
usually
for clarifying
at ski resorts.
That.
Yeah. But you know, like if you're working EMT, usually you have an ambulance or a facility nearby, right? Like where there's stuff. So we got to get people off the hill to where they can get to those things. So I'm still getting all my checkoffs done though, because there's a bunch of stuff you have got to get like certified on before they let you do it. So this last week, we actually started I started my toboggan training. So if you see the ski patroller skiing down the hill with the toboggan in back, that's like how you get someone down the mountain. If they get hurt, you put them in the toboggan and you ski them down. Mm-hmm. And so Saturday, it was a holiday weekend. Saturday was super busy and we were trying to get some training done. And it was actually a beautiful day. It was sunny. The snow was kind of soft from the sun hitting it. And we had a great day skiing. But it was so busy, we kept having calls. And so we like couldn't get through our training. And it was funny because we were training with the toboggan and there's supposed to be this toboggan pack inside the toboggan that kind of has the blankets and everything that the patient goes in. Well, we didn't have any of that with us because we were just training and we kept skiing up on people that needed help. So we had this toboggan with none of the stuff in it. So we kept having a radio and be like, hey, we need more stuff. We have the toboggan, but not all the stuff that goes in the toboggan. And dispatch is like, wait, what? You have a toboggan, but no stuff? Like, what is going on? And we're like, yeah, we're training. We just can't get through our training. So anyways, the whole day was super busy. We ended up not getting through all of our training like we planned on because we're helping people all day, which was a good thing.
Right.
We finished the day and I went back up on Monday, which was MLK day, another holiday. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a pretty mellow day. We didn't have very many issues, but the temperatures dropped and everything got nice and icy and firm.
Ooh.
So we decided to finish our toboggan training on Monday, but everything's super icy. And we had left off like skiing the most advanced slopes with the toboggan. That's what we hadn't done yet that we were mm-hmm. going to do. So now everything's super moguly and super icy. And we go like, okay, let's go take the toboggan down the steepest, most moguly slopes possible.
Yeah, and I was ideal like, conditions.
Oh, if we could have done this last Saturday, it would have been so much easier. it was quite the workout trying to get that toboggan down some really steep, really moguly. Yeah. But we did it. I made it, got through, didn't crash, didn't lose the toboggan. So I got that checked off. And next up, I got to get certified to actually put patients in the toboggan. So one step at a time. We're moving along. But I can now deliver a toboggan to anyone that needs one.
You can now deliver an empty toboggan with no helpful supplies to an injured person on the mountain.
Yes. Well, no, I can put helpful supplies in it now. Yeah.
Oh,
now,
you now can. They're going to let you do that. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. We should have had. Yeah. Because we were training, we just made it as light as possible for a lot of the stuff we were doing. But yeah, now I can bring down a toboggan with the basics. No patience yet, but we're getting there.
In the realm of hobby world, I took some more lessons with my golf coach last week, and it was awesome.
Nice.
So not nearly as dangerous as what you're doing, although I did break my ankle on a golf course, so it still can be kind of dangerous out there.
Yeah. If only they had golf patrol.
Oh, dude, I would sign up for that in a heartbeat. Homie, you know it. Oh my gosh.
You get a free golf pass.
Yeah.
And you got to go help people when they get hurt on the golf course.
Yeah. Oh, I love this idea.
Yeah. What kind of, you need like some sort of trailer though that goes behind a golf cart to like carry him out. Like a, you know,
perfect.
What I mean?
We can just like modify
sort of,
we can just modify the beverage cart.
There we go. So it's a modified first aid beverage cart.
That's right. And most of the people, you know, are just like, they're going to get attacked by a goose that they got too close to at the water hazard, or maybe they got hit by someone's ball or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
No avalanches to deal with.
We got another goose injury. Got to get out there.
10-4, we got a gooser. Yeah. Oh, I would do that. That would be fun.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, I love skiing and it's kind of similar. It's just probably more injuries on the ski slopes than golfing, I would guess.
But I would imagine, yes.
Cool. Well, today we wanted to jump into one of the, probably the hardest months of our career. It was a pretty brutal month on the road. And this was a long time ago. This was
many moons ago.
Yeah. January of 2004, mm-hmm. which to us has like, makes your spine tingle a little bit. You're like, January 2004.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that scene in Lion King, like, yeah. Ooh, gives me the shivers.
Is it Mufasa? Mufasa. Woo!
Mufasa. Like that. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so January 2004 was just a brutal month. And our old manager, Darren Tyler, you said he came up with a name for, for that run that we did.
Yeah,
right?
In hindsight, he dubbed that tour the Gates of Hell Shall Not Prevail Tour. Which is pretty right on the mark.
Yeah. So to this day, this tour still is a source of stress a little bit. Like every time we tell the story, we're just like, oh my goodness, that was so stressful.
Yeah. And as we go through all the details, we're like, oh, hang on, we're still not done. Like, there's more.
We keep remembering things. So this is going to take a minute to get through this story, but it is a part of our past. And I want to say up front too, I think that it's also important because I think sometimes circumstances tend to dictate where we think we are in our standing of our spirituality or what God's called us to do or, you know, where we're supposed to be headed in life. Right. And so sometimes when circumstances don't go well, you're like, is that a sign from God that I'm totally in the wrong right now?
Right.
Or is this just life not going the way I want it to go? And so that's something that we, I think, really wrestled with throughout this whole process while we were in the, in the thick of it, of going, did we take a wrong turn somewhere and we're completely not where we're supposed to be? Or is this just life not going well and opposition happening? And yeah, maybe spiritual warfare, maybe just fallen world, right? Like all of those things. So as we go through this story, just kind of keep that in mind of, like these circumstances and these things. Looking back now, we've continued to do ministry and music for many, many more years after this. But in the moment, we were wondering if we would survive another month to do any of that.
And we've talked about this before, but like sometimes following your calling can feel like you're swimming against the current. And sometimes ministry does, you go through these seasons where it feels like you keep getting blow after blow, like just punched in the face again and again. This is one of those examples from our story and our 20 years of touring and traveling and doing ministry together. This is one of those stories. And I mean, frankly, like, I think we've even asked each other before, like, do you feel like you learned anything from that whole experience? Or like, do you feel like you understand why it all happened? So I feel like I learned stuff from that experience, but I definitely don't feel like I understand why it all happened. What I did learn was perseverance and resilience and learning in our personal friendship, just more, it was like more content, more weight behind like trusting each other, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that definitely came from it. But sometimes, this is a perfect example. Sometimes it just feels like you keep getting knocked down again and again.
Yeah. So a couple things to set up just this story is, because this was 2004, I had been married for about 2 years. James, you've been married for about 1 year at this point. So we're still fairly new in our marriages. We're only a couple years into our career with Cutlass. Finances are still very tight, you know, a real concern just to make ends meet. And we're still kind of in that place where a lot of times you're just trying to make enough money to get to the next show so you can keep going. And we had a couple things that we were able to kind of, I guess, upgrade to. We had gone from our van and trailer to an old tour bus. And then we kind of just hired a friend of a friend to drive us initially. And then on this run, I think we finally had a professional driver with us, but
Yeah.
You'll hear in the story shortly. He didn't get to drive us that much for this run. But we also had just come off of like a pretty awesome tour, honestly. Like this was, I think for us, things felt like they were on the up and up and going well. And so we had recorded Sea of Faces.
We had just worked on recording Sea of Faces. Sea of Faces was about to come out this year, 2004.
Okay.
So a few months,
that's right.
A few months after this whole January 2004 debacle.
Yeah. So new record getting ready to come out, which is always exciting. This is our second record. So it's the follow-up. Lots of hopes and expectations for that. And then, yeah, so we'd done the Go Show with Mercy Me and Audio Adrenaline.
That's right.
And right at that time was when the song I Could Only Imagine, like while we were on that tour, I Could Only Imagine like completely popped. And
yeah,
the show started blowing up and tons of people started coming. And
the crowd reaction to that song at that point in the night, every night, was like palpable and very, very, it was very different. Like you could tell something big was happening with that song.
Yeah. 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 And that's, I mean, it was a huge song. I think it had a short stint on mainstream radio as well. Obviously dominated all the Christian charts. I mean, it was massive. So there was, you know, it was a really fun, big tour. We were opening for those guys. And so coming off of that was like, that's pretty awesome, right? You feel like stuff's on the up and up, new record coming out, big tour.
Right.
Which by the way, before we jump into our dark, sad story of 2004, there were two things on that tour that were extremely memorable. First of all,
on the Go Show tour.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Ben Cecil, the drummer for Audio A, was super into RC cars on that tour. Like,
oh yeah, that's right.
He liked to have a hobby every tour just to make things fun. And so he got really into RC cars and he got everybody else into RC cars. So I think by the end of the tour, there was like 30 RC cars and trucks, and we'd build tracks out back around the, we'd find dirt and like build tracks and jump them.
Yeah.
And they built ramps. They were jumping cars, off, like RC cars off the roofs and stuff, and driving around the venues. And
were
just
a lot
a blast
of these
with it.
Were gas-powered RC cars. Is that right?
Some, well, that kind of happened towards the end. A couple guys got some gas-powered ones. But here's the funny thing, too, in all of this, back to our Made in China thing. So I remember all these guys were like, the nice RC cars are expensive. Like they're expensive. And the guys were going to the hobby shops. Like
that's
every
why
day.
I didn't get into this.
Yeah. They were going to the hobby shops like every day and getting all like upgraded batteries and parts and, you know, and they broke parts the day before. So every day they were getting a runner to go to the hobby shop, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then Ben was filming a bunch of it too. So he was putting together like film edits of our trucks and stuff, the RC cars.
And a random fact, Ben Cecil also, shot and directed our Tonight music video out on our very first tour with the Supertones and PAX 217.
That's right.
Ben was into videography and making short films and stuff. So yeah, what you're saying about the RC stuff, he started filming all that and making fun like short movies of all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really wanted to participate, but I couldn't afford like a legitimate like Traxxas, you know, name brand car, right? So I'm like, these guys are spending hundreds of dollars, and I'm like, I can't do that. So I went online and I found some Chinese knockoff for like $40 or something RC truck, and I bought that and got it shipped in to a venue, and so I was able to participate, but I was definitely not quite hanging with the caliber of the other cars that were there. But anyways, that whole thing, like, so we're, that whole tour was like the RC car tour. And then, at the end of that tour, I think Ben sent a bunch of footage and stuff into RC Car Magazine, and they ended up getting a huge write up in the magazine from the tour.
Yeah.
They used some photos and stuff, and it was kind of funny. So just one
what
of those
random
thing. Side things. here we all are in RC Car Magazine, 'cause we're hobbyists for one tour. But it was super fun. It was really fun building tracks and racing RC cars, you know, throughout the day before the shows.
That's true.
And then the other thing on that tour was the last night of tour, the prank night, was possibly the greatest prank night of any tour we've done, I think. Like it took the cake. There was a lot that happened that night, but it was
took the cake. Interesting that you used that metaphor. It was definitely one of our greatest feats. Also, if you don't know, listener, usually on tours, the last night, the last performance, like last city, oftentimes is like prank night with the bands, and they're all kind of having one last, you know, hurrah and pulling pranks on each other. So sometimes if you happen to be like the lucky or unlucky audience that goes to that show, you're going to see a bunch of random crap happen on stage that night, and you're going to be like, what are they doing? But on this tour, we were kind of like new in the market, and Audio A had been a band for a while, and Mercy Me had been a band for a while, and they all knew each other, and they had like been getting to know us a little bit. I remember they were kind of like ribbing us, you know, going like, oh, we're gonna prank you guys so bad. And they had a reputation for pulling off like pretty big, pretty epic pranks, especially between them and the Newsboys.
They had quite the war happening between the two
in the early CCM years. And they kept saying to us like, oh, we're going to get you so bad. And our response was always like, look, don't do anything and we won't do anything to you. But if you mess with us, you are going to regret it. And they were like, yeah, whatever. You guys don't know anything. But you remember, we just kind of kept like sticking to that.
Yep.
We would say, don't do anything.
And they're thinking, we've been doing this for years. You guys are a bunch of young kids that, you know, you've hardly been on any tours. There's no way that you can hang. Like, we're the king of pranking and we're going to destroy you guys. So they probably thought
they had the resources to like pull off some elaborate thing, and they didn't know we were going to go all street on them.
Yeah. So they did. They did some good pranks on us. I remember they put like a stink capsule and broke it and put it inside the microphone capsule that I was singing into. Yuck. So like it smelled awful. Like you could taste it. Cause I have to sing into this thing for the whole set. Right. Like it was terrible. And then put a microphone into the soundboard, the monitor board, and started singing in our in-ears. So like you couldn't hear yourself sing. All you could hear is some guy like way out of tune, like yelling into your in-ears. Right. So I just had to rip my in-ears out cause I couldn't even hear what I was doing. But we just kept going. We just like, all right, we're not going to let him phase us. We're just, you know.
And they did a bunch of other stuff too. I can't really remember, but
I think they were throwing stuff at us and just silly stuff. It wasn't too bad.
Wasn't too bad. We may have overreacted, but we did overreact and we won.
Well, we warned them though. We said, don't mess with us. If you mess with us, you will regret it. And we don't want to start this, but we'll finish it.
So the good thing was we were earlier in the night, and then after us was Mercy Me and an intermission and then Audio Adrenaline. So we had time to like go, okay, what are we going to do? And I believe across the street was like a grocery store of some kind. So we went over there and we bought a bunch of water jugs and we bought a bunch of bags of flour. And basically our plan was when they're up on stage at a certain point in their concert, once they've settled in and they think that they're fine, we're going to walk up in pairs and one person's going to completely douse each member of Audio Adrenaline, completely douse them in water. And all like this, just snap, snap, real fast, douse with water, and then poof, bags of flour dumped on them. Yeah. And so we did. We ran up on there, and we left Tyler out of it. We left him alone. But we got everyone else, and just like water, poof, flour, poof. And they basically turned into like.
And water and flour.
Yep.
Instantly big dough.
Big balls of dough on stage.
They threw ping pong balls at us on stage that said like Cutlass Sucks or something on them. And I remember we reloaded those. They had those CO2 cryo cannons. So we reloaded those in all of the CO2 cannons.
So when their
CO2 went off, ping pong balls started bouncing everywhere out of the smoke, which was super funny. And then,
At the very end of the night, the confetti cannon.
Yeah.
They had this big confetti blast queue. at the
end. Yeah, we turned those in, which was great because they're already covered head to toe in dough, so they're all sticky. And then we pointed the confetti cannons in, so it was straight up tar and feather. I mean, confetti just totally stuck
pretty
to
much,
them.
Pretty much, yeah.
They're all just white head to toe in dough, and it was just utter chaos. And Mercy Me had been pranking them the whole night as well. So
that's
it was
right.
Like they just got absolutely destroyed.
Yes, they did.
That night. But it was super fun. And yeah, later they were like, we're gonna get you guys back so hard. You better check your bus to make sure it gets home. You know, just totally like, and they didn't. I think they actually were a little bit scared. And but it bordered on that, like, feelings were actually starting to kind of get hurt, I think.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't funny anymore.
Remember a few years after that, we went on tour with them again. And on the final day of tour, they slid these like agreements across the table, like these pieces of paper across the table to us. And they're like, we would like you to sign these that you're not going to do anything to us tonight.
Yeah.
And we were like, nope, same contract as before. If you don't do anything, you're going to be fine.
Yep. And they didn't do anything. They didn't touch us. And so we didn't touch them. We let it go.
It's true.
But had they touched us, we were prepared.
Indeed.
Yep. So that was a fun one. One of the more legendary prank nights of our career.
That was a fun one.
It was fun. But anyway, so jumping back into January 2004, I would say, again, to kind of set the tone here, one of the greatest struggles in this whole season for me, besides the circumstances, was this underlying piece of finances. And anybody that's gone through financial difficulties understands how much stress that can bring. So to set this up, we had come off of tour and we'd been working hard all year. At this time, we were touring like almost 300 days a year. We were constantly out on the road. So we decided to come home for the holidays. We were home for Christmas, basically took like the month of December off almost. So we'd been home for a little bit. We kind of saved up money so that we could do that, see our families, be home for a minute. And then New Year's Eve was supposed to be a big show for us down in California at Knott's Berry Farm. We had this big New Year's Eve show at Knott's Berry Farm, which we were really excited about. And we had planned on that kind of being, all right, we got this show and then we'll get paid for that. And that'll help us get to kind of this next run of shows that we had planned out. So it was all, we had a great plan and we had a financial plan for it. But what we had not planned for was all of the chaos that was about to ensue and all of the financial problems that would bring with it. So, here we are getting ready to go a couple days probably before New Year's Eve, cause we had a long drive to get down there. So I guess it technically started at the end of December of 2003. And, we went to go get our bus. At this time it was parked in the Portland area and somebody at our church had let us park the bus for the month on their property, which was super nice of them. But strangely, as Portland gets, it rained a whole bunch, which is super weird that Portland got a ton of rain and got super muddy, and our bus got stuck in just a ton of mud. So our bus driver went out to go get the bus right out of the gates. We haven't even left town yet, and he can't get the bus out. So tow truck number one of our journey comes out, and, you know, a tour bus, you can't just get a regular tow truck. Like, you got to get one of the big boy semi truck tow trucks to get those things out. So that was the beginning of this run right out of the gates before we've even gotten on the bus. And again, keep in mind, this is our 1985 Eagle tour bus that is, it had wheels and, you know, and an engine, but it wasn't luxurious. It was our first tour bus. It was not the nicest tour bus ever, but, we were stoked to be in a bus. So our old tour bus got pulled out of the mud, finally got us all together. And we were like, all right, so now we're running later than we had planned, which we left some time for that. But, we're running later than we'd planned because it took us a long time just to get the bus to bus call so that we could get our trip started. So that was the beginning of our journey. Tow truck number one, we finally get everybody all loaded up. There's mud all over the side of the bus and the tires and everything, but we're like, all right, we're rolling. Here we go. And we head south on I-5 from Portland all the way down, headed to LA. and we get down to the Grapevine area, which is that pass right before you get down to, into LA, if you've ever driven that road. And we get to the top of, we're almost to the top of the Grapevine. We're climbing the hills, and the turbo on the bus goes out. And basically that just takes out all the power in the engine where we just can't go.
Right. And there's many hills ahead still, and we just really can't get through the rest of this pass at all.
Yeah. Yeah. We're stuck. It's the bus is dead. So it pulls off to the side of the road, and we...
Now we're calling for tow truck number two.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, again, to bring it back to the finances, those tow trucks are also not cheap.
Right.
And now we're like, this is New Year's Eve. The show is that day. And we're
mere hours away. Yes.
Yeah. So we start making phone calls. We're like, okay, how can we get to this show? We don't want to miss the show. Like we rescheduled sound check. We tried to do everything we could. And time goes on, and we just have not been able to find a ride. We can't get down there. And finally, we're going to miss this show. Like, so we're just trying to get there in time for showtime, not even sound check or anything, just get there at all. And because it's New Year's Eve, we could not get a taxi company to come get us. They're like, you're up on the Grapevine? No way. We're not driving up there. Uber wasn't a thing back then, so that wasn't an option. We looked into everything we could think. I think we even called limo companies, and they were all like booked out. They're like, it's New Year's Eve. We're completely booked out. Like, we can't come. And so we were just completely stuck. And the thing, again, that was so devastating about that was now, after our second tow truck, a major engine repair is now needed on our bus too, which we don't totally know how much that's going to be or what all's entailed. We just know it's broken.
Right.
And it's going to be expensive because those are expensive. We've come off of a little bit of time off where we kind of maxed out any money that we had. So we have no money stored up now. And we're about to miss this show that is like the key to us having enough money to keep going. And if we don't show up to the show, we're not going to get paid for the show. So this, in a matter of a day, you know, to 2 days, we've just gotten a massive financial hit.
It became very complicated.
Yeah. And we're going, what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with this? And there was a hotel, like where we got towed to that there was like a truck stop that our bus got towed to, and there was like a hotel there. And so we ended up staying at that hotel. It was just a cheap truck stop hotel, but it was a place to be since our bus was gone. And we stayed there for the night, missed the show, but already the stress levels are like, man, this is brutal. This is tough. I'm trying to remember. So you then had to get home, right? Immediately following.
Yeah,
that.
I had to get to the airport. I had to get down to LAX and get to the airport to fly home. My best friend Joe Mendenhall and his was getting married. So his wife Brandy, they were getting married. This was January of 2004, and you know, like you said, Lindsay and I had been married for about a year. January of 2003 was our wedding, and so. Lindsay was with me on this trip, as we got stranded in the bus down, north of LA, in the Grapevine. And I was going to fly home, for a couple days to be at this wedding. So I had to leave, and, you guys had to try and figure out how to get across the country because we had more shows to go do. And yeah. The plan originally was, well, we'll just drive in our bus across the country to go start this next leg of shows for the 2004 touring season. So I left and you guys were still stranded and no bus.
So here's Lindsay with a few band guys and a few crew guys and our bus driver and all of us. And then at the same time, Kyle, who was our drummer at the time, his mom had been diagnosed with a cancer diagnosis at the same time.
That's right.
And so
he went home too.
He ended up going home to support his family and be with his mom during a pretty difficult time. So emotionally, that really added like another kind of big heavy thing on top of all of this. You know, they're still figuring out how severe this is and what that journey is going to look like because it was a new diagnosis. So he leaves and goes home, and we're trying to figure out where we're going to stay, what we're going to do.
Right. And in the meantime, we had arranged for our good friend Jesse Sprinkle to be playing drums for us on this upcoming run of shows. Jesse is Aaron Sprinkle's brother, great producer that we've worked with a bunch of times from the earliest part of our career up to, you know, the first four or five albums. And then we also did Surrender album with Aaron. But Jesse, yeah, his brother, is an awesome drummer. He was in some of those bands that we've talked about before, and some of those bands that you loved that Aaron was in. And
yeah,
so Jesse was going to be playing drums for us while Kyle was at home with his family.
Yeah, and that was for once we got to the East Coast and started that run. But right, we're still in California. My wife, Shannon, is actually at home because we had just bought our first townhouse. So we're brand new.
That's right, over in
this
Beaverton.
This was the first time we've ever had a home of any kind, and got a great deal on a townhouse. And so we were excited about that. We got the keys right before I left. Well, Portland has, I think they called it Snowmageddon. It was super unusual amount of snow, really cold. I think it got down into, like, you know, single digits or low teens, which is crazy cold for Portland. Like, that never happens.
Yeah. And so listeners should know that that's actually pretty rare for Portland anyway. We don't really get a lot of big snowy, you know, low temperature ice storm stuff. It happens rarely for us.
Yeah. The mountains get a ton of snow, but down in the city, rarely. And, and so we had just moved into this house, and I mean, didn't even hardly have anything in the house yet. And and then I left for the show, and somewhere between Christmas and New Year's, and then everything's closed around the holidays, right? They had come out and shut off our—I can't remember if it was our electricity or our gas. I think it was possibly our electricity, and then maybe we had a gas stove. So we had, anyways, we had no heat in the house. So my wife calls me and says, "Hey, we have no heat. The heat's out. Like, they shut off everything.
The house is freezing.
The house is freezing cold. What do I do? We just had a massive snowstorm. It's crazy cold out, and we have no heat." And I'm down in California with a broken down bus and no money, trying to figure out what to do. And we actually, how we got off the grapevine, we had some friends that lived in California. A few of their kids, the Marvin brothers, Cameron and Casey and Aaron, Marvin, all three of them. Well, I guess just Cameron and Aaron went to school with us up at Warner Pacific College at the time. And I played soccer with both Cameron and Aaron. And then Casey started making guitars later, which is a whole another cool story. But
that's right.
Veritas Guitars, he started that, which is really cool. So anyways, we were friends with their family. They ended up picking us up the next day off of the grapevine and brought us down to kind of the LA area. I think we were like in Oceanside or something. And they had a beach house that they were renting.
Chino, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
but they had a beach house
we
they were renting.
A beach house in Oceanside.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So they let us stay with them for a couple of days while we were figuring out what we were going to do. And I remember getting that call from my wife, and here I am, like, in Ocean. I think it was Oceanside. And I remember just sitting on a curb being like, what do I do? As, you know, fairly newly married husband, got our first house, the power's out, there's no heat, my wife's there by herself, and I'm feeling like really bad about that. I'm like, what do I do? Yeah. Like, I can't fix this. And we tried calling the power company, everybody, no one's answering. It's the holidays, they're closed,
yeah,
and we can't get anybody out to help us.
So what did she do?
Well, I told her, I was like, does the oven still work? And she's like, yeah. She was able to get, you know, heat from the oven. I was like, well, turn the oven on, open the oven. And then I'm really into outdoor stuff. And so I had like this 0 degree down sleeping bag that, I'd use to like camp on mountains and stuff. And
right.
So I told her, get the down sleeping bag, sleep in that. That'll keep you at least safe warmth wise. You won't freeze to death in that. And then, yeah, sleep by the oven, you know, get as much heat from that as you can. And that was kind of how we managed getting through that, you know, initial, until we could get someone to come out and turn the heat back on. And so, but
sounds
the whole time,
cozy,
you know, yeah, but I'm like, you know, I'm 1,000 miles away going, I'm on the phone just going, I can't really help you. Like, I don't know what else to do, you know, how else do I help you? So it was really stressful from just as being like a husband and trying to be there for your wife, like that was on top of everything else. And just that whole situation was stressful, trying to get the heat back on and all of that. It was just on top of our bus being in the shop, on top of all the financial things, on top of all these other things. And we're also trying to figure out how in the world we're going to get from California now to Nashville, where was kind of our plan was to head out. And we still owned our van and trailer, which was in Nashville. So we thought if we could just get from here to Nashville, then we could,
right,
we'll at least have a vehicle that we can drive to get us to the next, right, few shows. But LA to Nashville is a pretty big gap.
And yes.
You're,
yes,
like,
it is.
You can't just like thumb a ride with all, you know, with your guitars and just hope that it,
yeah,
hope that you make it there. So we were trying to figure out what to do, and we didn't really have enough money even for rental cars or anything like that, because we're kind of maxed out now between all of the tow trucks and the repairs and the hotels and things that have happened already. Like, and we didn't get paid for that show that we were planning on getting paid. We're pretty maxed.
Right.
And so I remember we went to the rental car shop and we thought, this is the only way we're going to make it. We just have to get a rental car. All of my cards and stuff were maxed out at this point. I didn't have any way to get through. And I think Ryan maybe gave him a debit card or something, and they took it, and it worked. And so we're like, hurry, let's leave before they find out we don't have any money. Let's just get, yeah, on the road. And it, yeah, so it cleared. We got the rental car and we headed across America. And so again, Lindsay is with us without you, because you're, yep, going to fly to Nashville and meet us. My wife,
right,
is up in Portland in a snowstorm and going to fly out to meet us in Nashville as well. And so Lindsay got stuck in a minivan with a few of us guys. And I think Mike Dusnap was with us. He was running merch,
that's
at the,
right,
time. He was a buddy from
one
college.
One of our, yeah, college friends selling merch for us on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. So we piled in, we shoved, you know, I mean, a minivan with like a bunch of people, tried to cram as many guitars in there as we could, and just some merch stuff and in our suitcases, and we hit the road and drove,
right,
clear across America. It was one of those things of where like, I don't even totally know how we made it. Because we just had no money. We were just trying to get there as fast as we could, and you know, credit card would work or go through, and it was enough to get us to get us to Nashville. So we finally get to Nashville. We drop off the rental car. We get our van and trailer, and now it's great because the van and trailer has so much more space than our little minivan did. We were just completely piled in there with all our stuff, totally cramped for a cross country trip.
Right.
And so van and trailer now, we got that. You fly in, Shannon flies in, and we're like, all right, we're starting fresh. We got another show we're going to get to, and this is going to, you know, hopefully this will be the beginning of things starting to work. But no.
Nope.
It was not meant to be.
Nope.
So I think that first show was in Roanoke, Virginia. Does that
Roanoke,
sound right?
Virginia. And that's where Jesse Sprinkle was going to fly in from where he lives in New York. He was coming to meet us down there. And again, massive snowstorm. All of a sudden, Roanoke Airport is like completely shut down. His flight lands, but there's no airport crew. There's no airport workers or personnel at all. So we go pick him up at this airport, and it's like an hour before, you know, doors open for this show. He gets picked up, and of course they've lost his bag, and there's no one at the airline counter to help find out where his lost bag is. So he shows up at this venue we were playing, and we didn't have time to rehearse together. You know, like, he's not our usual drummer. He's an incredible drummer and had played a lot of the songs on our upcoming Sea of Faces record that was going to come out. So he was prepared and we were prepared, but like, it would have been nice to go through a little rehearsal first.
Yes.
Mainly, big bummer for him was he literally didn't have any of his belongings with him. So we play the show, and I think the plan was after to head back to the Roanoke Airport and see if we could like go to the airline counter and see if they had tracked, yeah, his bag yet. But
yeah,
that was not to be either, because we showed up and the airport was completely locked up, all the lights off, no one home. It was so disheartening.
Literally the clothes on his back is all he has. And the other thing about that show was they had planned us bringing our amps, because when we booked it, we were supposed to have our bus and trailer and all of our amps and gear. And that was all still in California. So we had to just find whatever gear we could find locally, like the local praise band, like local, you know, there's this local rock band that has a couple amps. Like we just scraped together and had the most hodgepodge gear. The backline gear was like random amps and drums and things just pieced together just to make that show happen. But it happened. We got done, we got paid, and we're like, oh, we have gas money. We can make it to the next show. And so that night we get back on the road and we're headed out in the van and trailer, like, all right, it's tight because we had booked these shows planning on being on a bus, and kind of the normal flow of that is you play the show, you get on the bus, you drive all night, you get there in the morning, you set up, sound check, play the next show, drive all night, and that's kind of the flow, pretty normal flow of tour. Well, that's the way this run was scheduled, expecting us to be on a bus, but we don't have that bus now, so we play the show, and then we have to pretty much drive all night, and which is tough because we were planning on sleeping in the bus, but now we're awake. So we're driving all night. Like you said, the airport stuff put us back some time too, because we're trying to get Jesse's luggage and find him something. Doesn't find anything. Finally, we're just like, let's just go to Walmart and get him like a couple t-shirts and change clothes so he can have and a toothbrush so he can have something.
And a sweatshirt.
And it's freezing cold. Yeah, I don't think he even had a jacket, and it's like freezing out. And so we hit the road. We're driving along. And I remember I was driving and I've driven in the snow and stuff a lot. Like we talked about, I love skiing, so I've been in the snow quite a bit. But it is tricky when you have a trailer on the back too. That makes it extra tricky. And so we're cruising along on the freeway, moving pretty fast, you know, just normal. It seems like everything's temperatures. It's like slightly raining, so it's not really snowing at this time. And all of a sudden, the back end of the van just kicks out sideways and super scary. And so I'm like doing the wax on, wax off on the steering wheel with the trailer. Yeah. We're just fishtailing, sliding all over the place. And at one point I was like, I can't hold it. Like we were headed for this guardrail and there was just this drop off on the other side of the guardrail. And we were just sliding sideways right towards it. And I was like, I've done all the correction I can. We're gonna hit that thing. And you know, there were some people sleeping in the back. I don't think everybody was buckled up. Like it would have been gnarly. Could have been super, super bad. And right before we got to that guardrail, we hit a patch of like solid pavement again, and it whipped back around and just, you know, back and forth, back and forth. Finally got it. Finally got it zeroed back in, got it all straight again. And I was like, eyes as big as saucers. My heart's beating out of my chest going, oh gosh, that was close. That was so close. That could have been really bad. And so I realized, I was like, oh, we've got freezing rain. That's what's happening right now, is it's freezing rain. The rain's hitting the pavement. The ground is colder than the air, and it's freezing once it hits the ground. So I started driving really slow because I was like, this is dangerous, dangerous conditions. I've been in it before and it's super dangerous. So we're driving, you know, like 20, 30 miles an hour with our flashers on, and cars are just flying past us. Like trucks are doing like 70 miles an hour, just blasting past us. And I'm just going, man, this is going to be gnarly. Sure enough, as we kind of get down the road, all of a sudden, like, you know how roads are kind of crowned a little bit for... like, so the water runs off and the rain kind of runs off. That slope was enough that the whole van and trailer just began to kind of slide sideways slowly. Like it didn't fishtail like normally, you know, like what had happened earlier. It just slowly began to slip side. And I was like, I can't fix this. Like we're just literally slowly sliding
drifting
off the side.
To the right.
And we just drifted. And I was like, hold on guys, we're going to go off the road. Like, here we go. Right. Everybody hang on. And sure enough, we kind of slid into the ditch and bumped into this embankment, and everyone was fine. It was like the most slow motion crash of all time. Yeah. I think the only thing that happened on the van is like we had a little sidestep into the side of the van that got like shoved under a little bit, got bent.
Yeah.
But other than that, the van was fine. Everybody was fine. But now we're in the ditch and we're totally stuck. Like it's kind of muddy in that ditch and we can't get out, and we're totally
muddy
stuck.
And so snowy.
So we spend the next little bit watching these cars zoom by us on what is a sheet of ice, and sure enough a semi truck jackknifes, and then it is like the ice escapades, cars bowling for other cars. I mean, people hit their brakes and just skid, skid, skid and ping into another car, and cars are going everywhere. And we're just hoping we don't get hit because it's
one
so...
by one. We're seeing a big traffic pile up, but we're also seeing accidents and, like, you know, these crashes and stuff. And so, yeah, it started to get pretty dangerous. And I remember a few of us needed to, like, go outside of the van to, like, try and take a leak or something even. And it was like, no, everyone get back in. It's really dangerous out there. Cars could literally just slide right off into you. And even inside the van, we were thinking, like, man, we're just sitting here. We could totally get hit by some wayward vehicle.
Yeah. And I remember one of the guys jumped out and ran up to the road, and the road was so slippery. He immediately slipped and feet over his head, fell on his butt, and then like couldn't get off the road because it was so slick. Like his feet were just spinning. He couldn't
get off
the road. Like
a baby deer.
I finally got off the road, and it was like, oh my goodness, that is straight black ice, the whole thing. And so, yeah, pretty scary situation just being in that and watching all the cars ping around. But we're all right. Nobody hit us or anything, thankfully. But because we had kind of run into the ditch on the earlier end, we went ahead and called a tow truck. We're like, we're going to need a tow out. So we called tow truck probably towards the earlier end of all of this happening. And this is tow truck number 3 on this trip so far. So they're like, yeah, we'll send somebody, but it's a mess out there. It's going to be a while, you know? So we're like, okay. Yeah. So come to find out, I think there was something like 75 cars within like a half mile area there that had ended up crashing or running off the road. I mean, it was a massive pileup that we were in the midst of it. And in that time, a state patrol car came and was like, you know, just checking, making sure everybody's okay. And so they checked on us and like, are you guys okay? Yeah, we're fine. We're just waiting on a tow truck. He's like, great, cool. I'll call one too. And we're like, okay, whatever. So he called a tow truck and we had called a tow truck. And ironically, both of those tow trucks somehow showed up at the exact same time to tow us out.
That's right.
And now there's cars everywhere that need towed, but these two guys both are trying to tow us and they get mad because they both got called. And we're like, well, we only called one of you. I don't know which one we called, but somebody else called the other one. It wasn't us. And so they both look at us and we'll like, they're trying to get us to pay both of them for the tow. Cause they're like, no, well, you called us, so you got to pay us. We're like, I didn't call you, you know? So we're arguing. And then these guys start like arguing with each other and it gets super heated and it's getting really uncomfortable.
Which was so dumb because 20 feet away is like 30 other people that need your help. So just tow one of them out.
Yeah. And I'm going, this is the third tow truck on this trip. Like, I can't afford to pay both of you. Like, we're already dying here financially. Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, I cannot do this.
Totally.
So finally, one of those guys just took off and got all, you know, was cursing, got in his truck and peeled away, and I'm sure he only had to go a couple hundred yards to find another car to tow out.
If that.
We finally get towed out. We get out of the ditch. Everything's all right. We're like, oh, okay, great. You know, we can get back on the road. So still really slippery out. So we're moving slow, but able to kind of get, once we got past this section, it was like semi-normal traction. We were driving carefully, but it wasn't solid ice the way that it had been. And we get, I don't know, maybe an hour down the road and the transmission starts to act weird in the van. And I could feel it like start to pull and you'd push the accelerator down and nothing would happen. And then it would kind of lurch. And I was like, man, what is going on? And all of a sudden, finally, it just completely went out. You push the gas pedal down, nothing happened. Engine revved, no go. And so we coasted off to the side. All of a sudden, all this steam like starts coming out of the hood. The engine. And we're going, oh, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, which must have happened during the slow motion crash, I would imagine. Something, you know, got
I don't know, maybe
loose or something under the undercarriage part, you know.
It's possible, but even when they replaced the I mean, they didn't mention that it had been like damaged. It just went out. Like the thing died. So I don't know. It could have been the accident. It could have just been our month where everything happened at once.
That's right.
And so here we are. We call for tow truck number 4 of this trip.
For those keeping track at home, tow truck number 4.
Tow truck 4. And it's freezing cold out, and but with all the steam and stuff coming on the engine, we don't know what's wrong. We don't want to start a fire. There's all this stuff pouring out, you know, underneath, and it doesn't look like the radiator. So we're like, well, we probably shouldn't keep the van running because it's whatever's going wrong here. You know, it's all pouring out of the engine. This isn't good. So we're freezing cold. It's still, you know, right around freezing. And we could see kind of up in the distance, we're like a half mile from an exit. And there's like the glowing Shell sign or whatever of a gas station at the top of this exit. We're like, oh, well, let's just walk up there. Because the tow truck, again, is going to be a while, probably a few hours because of how crazy this night is. And, you know, they're picking up cars everywhere. So let's just walk up to that gas station. We'll get warm up there and try and figure out what we're going to do from there. So we walk up there, we get into the gas station, and the person that's working in the gas station, it's like 4 a.m. at this time probably. Yeah. And the person working in the gas station is like, oh, you guys can't be in here. You can't just hang out in here. No loitering.
Yeah, they didn't want us loitering in their warm lobby.
And we're like, that van down there is ours and it's broken and it's freezing outside and we don't want to be here either. We're just trying not to freeze to death right now. So can you find it in the kindness of your heart to let us be here until we can get a taxi to take us somewhere? But we're in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's, you know, we're not in any town. So we're trying to find a taxi. And at this time, too, we didn't have like cell phone internet the way that we have today. So I believe we had woken Darren up in Nashville and we were like asking him to like help look up phone numbers and things on the internet. Because we just lit up his phone because, you know, I think at this point he just stayed awake all night because it just kept coming. And so he was like finding stuff for us. And then we call this taxi company and there's only one taxi cab in the entire town because it's a little tiny town and it's like 15 minutes away from where we are. And so they're like, yeah, well, we only have one taxi cab. There's no way I can get all of you from your 15 passenger van into a taxi cab. So you know, and it's 4 a.m. It's like, I'm the only one working. Like, there's no way to do this unless I do have this personal van, this cargo van that we could just put everybody in, sit on the floor, and we could at least get you to where you needed to go. So we said, well,
you're making this person sound like really accommodating and like logical and reasonable. The person that showed up was none of these characteristics. But it was their personal van. That is for sure.
Yes. And, you know, over the phone, we just figured out what's going to work. And so that's what we did. But this, like, old 1970s brown cargo van pulls up to the gas station. And this crusty mountain man dude gets out.
That's right.
And in between the two front seats, he had actually fashioned, like welded an ashtray that was like on a stand so that he could chain smoke and not have to like reach down. So it was just at the height where he could just reach his arm out and drop his ash off in between the two front seats.
This guy was smoking so much, his cigarettes were smoking cigarettes, basically.
It was, nonstop. I mean, just chain smoking. I think he went through a pack just the time that we were with him. And then in the back of the van was this dirty old mattress that was taking up the whole back of the van.
So gross.
And so he's like,
no other seats,
I'm your ride.
No bench seats, nothing.
Nope.
Just this guy up front ripping darts one after another and this frozen like ice box of a van with a dirty old mattress in the back.
Yeah, so gross. And just the whole thing. And it's freezing cold. And it's freezing in the van. So he's like, I'm your ride. So we all pile in and everyone is just going, are you kidding me? Like, this is our ride. And I remember I was going to pay the guy. So I was sitting shotgun in the front of the van. And I looked back at you guys. Well, I'm in the wafting of his chain smoking here. I look back at you guys and I totally, the best thing I can describe it as is in Dumb and Dumber when they pick up all the hitchhikers and they're all sitting in the back and you just kind of have this ragtag group of people. We're all haggard. We've been up all night.
But we were not happily singing a song together.
No, we were not. I look back, you guys are all just sitting on this mattress in the back of the van. And I'm up front and I'd open the window to try and get air because I couldn't breathe from all the smoke. And then it was too cold. Right. So you'd like roll the window back up to try and warm up. And it was just this constant battle. It was awful. But he gets us from that little gas station gets us to, I think it was Enterprise. There was an Enterprise rental car place in town. We're like, just drop us off there. They don't open till 7, but at least then we can get a car because we're still trying to get to this next show.
Well, I thought we had him just drop us off at that little diner that was right near the Enterprise.
Yeah, it was right. I think it was right next to it or right near it. Yeah. And so we're like, we'll hang out at this diner because the diner was the only thing open so that had heat and warmth. For right. us to be in. So we'll hang out in the diner until that Enterprise opens, and then we'll try and get a rental car at Enterprise so that we can continue our journey to the next show so that we don't miss another show. Again, really needing financially to get to that next show. And right. obviously we don't want to miss shows either, just for all the people expecting us to be there right. and the fans.
And just
and
to
promoters
review for the listeners, this is still the same 24-hour period. We played the show in Roanoke that Jesse was late for and the airport was shut down. And this all transpired in the course of one night so far. And we have a show this day that we're now into the day. We're into the wee hours of the morning. We have a show that evening in like Maryland or something like that. So we're sitting at this diner and these wonderful ladies there that were serving tables early in the morning, they let most of the guys go into the back section of the dining room that wasn't open yet. You know, they had like the accordion partition doors, you know, and it was dark back there and like they just let them like sleep on the floor in the back. But you and me and Shannon and Lindsay all sat in the booth just kind of staring at each other going, what do we do?
Yeah. And I think we literally like counted out some change so we could like order some like orange juice and coffee because we had no money. And so they were like, do you want anything to eat? And we're like, no, we just want to be warm.
but no,
no, we have no money. So we ordered like some orange juice or something just so we had ordered something, and they were super gracious. They were really nice to us and were the first people that were like, okay, I'm sorry, you're having a bad day. I remember we just sat down and we're like, what are we gonna do? How do we go from here? And or maybe that was where we hatched the Enterprise plan was there. And so we found that Enterprise. They opened at like 7 or 8 in the morning, and we showed up like right when they opened. We're like, we need a car. We're trying to get to this other town ASAP. And and we couldn't all fit in one car because there was too many of us and we had too much stuff. So we ended up renting two cars. And I believe on this one, with all of the snow and all of the weather we had, they had a couple cars with like 4-wheel drive or 8-wheel drive that we were able to be like, okay, we can get that. That'll help us get to the next couple shows. So we hop in the rental cars. Again, rental cars, not cheap, adding to our financial woes. And we took off, drove to the next show, which again, we were late for because of all the things that were happening. So it made it pretty chaotic for sound check and all of those kinds of things. But we did make it. We played the show. We got paid for the show. And then I think over the next 3 or 4 days, we were able to continue to like make it to shows in these rental cars and actually get to the show, actually play the show. We're like, okay, it's not going as planned, but at least we're making our shows now and without any massive disasters, other than a few speeding tickets, as I recall.
That's right. That's right.
And finally, I think we're up in Pennsylvania now after doing a handful of shows. And our bus had gotten fixed out in California. And our bus driver had made, while we were doing these other shows and doing all this other stuff, he made the cross-country trek in the bus to meet up with us because we were going to get back in the bus and then go ahead and get back to hopefully what was the original plan of doing this as a bus run. And so,
but we needed to go get our van and trailer from that little town where our van was getting repaired.
Yes, getting a new transmission.
Back to Nashville.
Yes. And once again, transmissions are not cheap.
Right.
So our van is somewhere in the middle of nowhere getting a transmission. And and our bus comes. So we're like, okay, here's the deal. We'll return the rental cars. We'll do the rest of the run in the bus. Then on our way back to Nashville, we'll swing by and pick up the van. And that was our plan. Well, we ended up with another huge snowstorm. And we'd been driving through the night every night. We're going on like days without sleep. We're totally thrashed. And after all the things that have happened thus far, I remember it's the evening and we called Enterprise and we're like, hey, we need to do just a one-way drop off for these because we need to not keep driving in these cars. It's not safe for us. It's snowy. We haven't slept and we now have a different ride with our bus. And they said, no, it's a small town. We don't do one ways. You have to bring those back, which was like 6 hours the wrong direction from where we were going and did not have time to do. And so they were like, nope, you can't, you have to bring them back here. And we're like, well, we can't bring them back there. And
because of the snowstorm. Yeah.
Yeah. And we haven't slept and we have a show we need to get to. If we miss the show financially, that's going to be a disaster again. So we finally, after Enterprise just told us no, we were like, well, we don't have a choice. So I remember we just found the closest Enterprise location. We dropped them off, dropped off the cars, put them in the, like the night drop slot with like a, I'm sorry note.
Yeah.
And then we called and left a voicemail with the rental shop
with the
that
other
we
got location.
Them from.
Yeah.
Yeah. It said, hey, here's where your cars are. We left them at this Enterprise location. I'm sorry. We can't get them back to you. Let us know how it works out.
Yeah.
And they did bill us for it. They ended up sending someone, they had to send someone up there to go get those cars and drive them back down. And they billed us for that. So that was something we had a nice little bill later for. But in hindsight, I still think it was the right decision. Better that than us dying in another snowstorm running off the road. So we're back on the bus now. The rental cars are left at a random Enterprise shop they're not supposed to be at. And we're back on the road. Here we go. We're back on track, so to speak. We play a few more shows in the bus. Things seem to be going fairly well, at least normally well again. And then we make our trek back towards Nashville and to go pick up our van and to complete our plan. And do you remember what happened on the bus?
Yeah, so we went and got the van and trailer, and then we were kind of following along behind the bus, and a bunch of us were in the bus, and I think, I don't know, probably you. I feel like you were always the driver in the van, so you were driving the van, and all of a sudden, we started having problems going on with our bus again, and we were in this mountainous pass, and we were heading downhill. And like the brakes weren't working basically. And our bus driver is like, hang on, I got to do something kind of dangerous to get us to stop. And thankfully there was an exit coming up where we could like take that exit and kind of coast to a stop. Unfortunately, it was like a truck inspection exit where.
Yeah, it was like the DOT.
That's right. Yeah. So we coast into this DOT department and, you know, and our bus is totally not up to DOT standards.
Seeing as it doesn't have brakes.
Right. And our bus driver, Mark, was like, man, y'all are going to have to get out. And so we all get out of the bus again and we all go get back in the van and trailer. And now we're, you know, off again.
And I remember following you guys into that DOT inspection station going, oh no, like, are we going to get a ticket? And the bus, is going to get stuck here because we're clearly not safe on the road at the moment with no brakes. And it was like a Sunday though. And so they were totally shut down and there was nobody there, thankfully.
Ooh, and then hot Mark, dog.
Yeah. Mark jerry rigged something on the brakes. He's like, well, I got it all figured out. It'll at least get us to the shop. And so we didn't have to call another tow truck, thankfully, which I thought we were going to have to call big tow truck again for tow truck number five. Is that what we're on?
I think it would have been number five.
So he was able to jerry rig the thing to get it to the shop, but we're all back in the van and trailer again now, and not in the bus once again. And we make that trek all the way back to Nashville. Bus goes into the shop. So again, more money once again into the shop, and van and trailer, we parked that. And I think we were all planning on flying home. Like at the end of this run. So this was supposed to be a run that would have been profitable and helped us had it not been Gates of Hell Shall Not Prevail tour. But so we go through all of that. And then as we're leaving and heading home, we're going through the damage of just everything that happened. We're trying to sort out the finances.
That's
and
right.
There's like all these laptops that have been like huge purchases with Dell on our credit card transactions, like thousands of dollars in transactions for like computers. And we're like, we didn't buy any of this. Turns out that somewhere along the way that we had identity theft and someone had gotten a hold of our information and started buying a whole bunch of stuff. And so at the end of all of this, to add insult to injury, we had to cancel like all our cards, redo all our bank accounts, redo everything. And I remember just being like, you have got to be kidding me. Like after everything we've gone through, now we got to redo everything. And it was like salt in the wound of what was already just an insane, brutal month. And in hindsight, I mean, thankfully, no one was critically injured. No one died. We had a few moments there that it could have gone way worse. And I mean, could have been real bad. But, you
we
know, we all survived.
Got kidnapped in that scary van.
Yeah. But ultimately, like, we made it. We survived. But there were those times throughout where you're just going, it seems like every time we take a step, there's opposition, and every time we take a step, like another thing happens, and it makes you not want to take another step because you go, what's going to happen if we keep going? What bad is going to happen next? And I've found that this happened way back in 2004, but through the course of our career, as we continue to have things happen, this actually became a real struggle for me later on in life where optimism, was challenging for me, and hope for the future became something that could be challenging because I'd had so many things go wrong. I started to expect the worst constantly.
Almost like shock therapy kind of.
Yeah. And I'm still to this day, I still wrestle with this of what's going to happen next a lot of times. And it's a result of just continually having really difficult seasons in life. And it's continued to happen. This wasn't the last difficult thing that happened for us. And we'll talk about more of that in future episodes, some of the other chaos that ensued in future days. But as life does, it ebbs and flows in seasons. And we went through this really difficult January. And then following that, we had probably one of the most profitable and best seasons of our career, as then, you know, a year later, Strong Tower comes out, is our, you know, best-selling record of all time. It goes gold. We have these huge tours. Like, there was kind of this, it was this real painful, difficult season right before a really great season. And then that really great season got thrust into another really painful season. And that kind of ebb and flow, I have found, seems to be just the way that life works. And I think sometimes I try and overanalyze, well, this is why it's happening, or maybe what's the reason behind this? And honestly, this whole story, I still don't know the reason. It was a bummer deal and it sucked a lot, but I don't know why it happened. I don't know why God allowed it to happen. And I maybe learned a few things from it, but mostly it was just really hard.
And we've talked about that on the show before. Like, life is like that. There's kind of this constant balance, of, you know, really good things that are preceded by really difficult seasons of life. And I was, you know, talking with my mom earlier this morning too, like, we're all usually balancing a bunch of emotions all at once. It's actually rare that our days are dominated by one strong emotion, whether that's joy or pain. It's actually pretty rare that a day is like dominated by one strong emotion. We're all pretty much balancing a bunch of things all at once, and we're trying to look for reason in all of it and look for balance in all of it. And especially in ministry, so many people can get caught up in, like, if things are going well, then that means that your ministry is blessed. I think what we've seen is, like, often if ministry is going well, you're actually going to get a lot of pushback, not only from the world, but from the enemy. You know, like, that is kind of an indicator if ministry is going well, because we were committed to the things we were doing. We were committed to writing songs that shared our testimonies of faith, and we were committed to writing songs that proclaimed who Christ was and glorifying God. And it was a very serious thing for us, and we had a lot of fun with it too, but it was very serious for us. So I think that's why I want to caution people as they listen to this, like, if you are stepping into ministry, I think you will see a lot of things go well. That is, like, again, life is balanced. There's good things and bad things happening all the time. But don't be surprised if it feels like you're getting knocked down again and again. And that's what this experience really felt like to us.
Yeah. So the other thing too, I think that's important to think about is how we define success in ministry, right? Like, it's not always defined by things are going well, going smoothly. You know, I think a lot of times we say, oh, well, God's blessing it because look at how many people come to my thing. And in reality, like, also, I mean, look at how many people come to Burning Man. It doesn't necessarily mean that God's blessing it, right? I think sometimes our way of looking at circumstances to identify what God's doing, I think we need to remember that it's not always defined that way. That it's, you know, we don't understand why January 2004 happened the way that it happened. And maybe we won't ever know why till we get to heaven. I don't know. But if our expectation was that what we were doing mattered more or less based on our circumstances, I think throughout our career, we would be convinced that our stuff didn't matter as much because we've had a lot of things that have happened. But
a lot of challenges.
It's understandable too, to go when things are really not going well, to go, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Is this right? Is this
right?
It's
kind of human nature. Throw your hands up and be like, why? And what's happening?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that so much to question, to go, man, I hate this. This is brutal. Why am I doing this?
Right.
And I think the trick in that though is to maybe ask yourself, just to recheck in and be, am I doing what God wants me to do? Or have I put my head down and I'm determined in my own thing to do my own thing to get the outcome that I want, right? And I think that's where maybe for someone with like my personality, sometimes I will put my head down and just keep plugging away, maybe when I should have changed directions or at least zoomed out for a second and been like, what's this going to cost me? Is this really what I'm supposed to do? And is this really what God has? Does this line up with what God has planned for my life? And
do you feel like you've gotten better at learning how to listen for that? Or was that one of the struggles at the time? You didn't know how to listen for that?
Yeah, I think I'm still learning and still trying to figure some of that out. But I felt like I hit a point, you know, just a few years ago where I was kind of like really burned out and then going, God, look at everything we've done. Like, I've sacrificed so much for ministry and for all of, you know, to do all these things. And I kind of felt like God was like, well, I didn't ask you to do all that. That was you determining the goals or the aspirations or what success looked like in ministry. And you are the one choosing to chase those things and willing to sacrifice things in your life. I didn't necessarily ask you to do that. And so that's where I think just zooming out a little bit and going, how do we define success in ministry? You know, you look at prophets like the prophet Jeremiah, I think we've talked about this before, where his ministry by all external views would have been considered a failure. Yet God had something different than maybe what he was seeing in his situation. And we're talking about him thousands of years later because of what God had planned for what he was doing, which was completely different than maybe what he would have wanted at the time. I'm sure he would have loved to have seen massive revival and been like, wow, this was amazing. Look at all the things we got to do.
Sure.
Instead of, you know, kind of the culmination of his ministry ending up in all the people he was supposed to reach ended up in exile. Like, that kind of went the opposite way.
It shows real strength of character to be able to persevere through those things, because I think it's human nature to like want to see metrics that make everything feel like it's successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that, you know, in Isaiah, we read about how God's ways are not like our ways and his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And, you know, in Isaiah 55, and I think sometimes we get thinking like God also thinks like some American capitalist CEO. Yeah,
totally. You
know, oh, these numbers aren't good, kids. You know, you're not meeting your quota. And it's like, nope, you don't know what that was for. And I think that it's okay for us. I mean, looking back on that, I would love to have some sort of like, you know, awesome storybook ending of like, and here's why we feel like that happened and what we know from it now.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I don't really know. And it sucked and it made me mad and it hurt my spiritual feelings. and yet everything was okay. And God was with us step by step as he promises. He will be with us. He will not forsake us, you know, and he was with us step by step. And it maybe just taught us a little bit more how to lean into that and how to trust that he was there and how to walk at his pace instead of run ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me in recent years has been kind of learning how to zoom out a little bit and not be so stuck in the results, but going, hey, I'm going to try and zoom out here. And yeah, if God's really showing me like this is wrong, then maybe it is, but not allow the individual pieces that I am emotionally struggling with, or, you know, those things, that to kind of just be able to step aside and look objectively at it and go, is that, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And if not, that's okay. We can change too. And if yes, then yeah, sometimes life is just hard and things happen and it just is. And we may not know why, but we live in a fallen world that's kind of the way things are sometimes. So I think it's for me been learning how to kind of like zoom out a little bit and objectively look at those things, not necessarily from a performance perspective, which is my tendency, is to look at it from more of a performance perspective. So
And you don't mean musical performance, you mean like qualification performance, like how well did I do, like you referred to in kind of your story about your life.
Are we being effective? Are we making a difference? All this
I think a lot of people struggle with feeling like that probably.
So well, there you go. January 2004. Dun dun dun.
Our
story, if you ever hear us reference it, now you know why. And it was pretty rough month. Lots of tow trucks, lots of struggles, but there's another.
What's the official tow truck count there? Well, is that five?
Well, I think the fifth one, Mark jerry-rigged the brakes so we didn't have to get number five.
Oh, it would have been at the DOT emergency
I think
stop.
That would have been number five. Okay. Yeah.
But we'll see if we can beat our record sometime.
Oh, I hope not. Huh? I hope not. Please no. That's not. That's a record I would like to not
please
break.
Please no.
So
yes.
Well, thank you guys again for listening. I hope that this episode has maybe encouraged you a little bit. If you're going through rough times, sometimes just hearing other people's hardships, sometimes that can be encouraging. Just to know that you're not alone in that. Life is hard sometimes. But we do have a lot more coming. And also, we would love for you guys to send us questions and emails and, interact with us. And we would like to read some of those questions, answer some of those questions on future podcasts. So you can send us an email at podcast@cutlass.com. And, we'd love to read those and hear from you guys. And if you have any comments or anything else, feel free to shoot us an email there as well. And, make sure you subscribe and keep looking for new episodes. We're doing this, you know, every other week, new episodes. So lots more coming your way. And we're excited to continue this conversation on Rock in a Hard Place.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next time.
Later.